Blog Talk Radio. Go.
No matter which way you look at it, Erie House Radio is fun. Good evening. Welcome to Erie House Oldie Timey Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, currently joined by
Dan Binkley from Weird, This Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One, and there's still no live connect here on the page.
It appears they lied to us or poorly described how to do it for listeners, gang. We were hoping that they would come through on what they're saying. The post is still there, saying you can direct connect, but no luck.
Yeah, I went to like 42 sites and found 3 sites that actually had that button on their page.
Okay, so Dave's done the research.
Yeah, it's a pretty small percentage. It must be something that you have to do the research on and do to add in there, Dale, in the settings or something.
I don't know.
Kind of what I'm thinking there.
I didn't think to check the competition. There is no competition. We're Erie House, damn it.
Well, I didn't say they were competition. I said they were live shows, not competition.
I'm joking. Hey, Father.
I would never say they were our competition. Never. 423
hike, or did you take a hike that was 42.3 miles? I don't know. Fogsbane, hi. Thanks for joining us in the chat. I have no idea what you mean. It is football season, though.
It is.
Last night.
Well, the Hall of Fame game just last night.
Yeah, and our hometown team walked away with a win. Not that it's a meaningful win. It's meaningful in testing out your young players.
Except that we kept our starting quarterback in against third stringers. So, yeah, Jay, I wonder why he was able to win that game. Because at halftime, we were behind. Halftime, we were behind. And he stayed
against third stringers
and beat them.
Yeah, the young kids stayed in for the Browns.
So did Watson. Watson stayed in against third stringers.
Today?
Yep.
Yesterday?
Yep.
I didn't know Watson even suited up.
Oh, yeah. He has to show everybody how sharp he is now, you know, how different he is from last year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Didn't work out so well, huh?
Well, he won against third stringers. There you go. What a man. Oh, I'm sorry.
Go, Browns.
No, I did not watch it. No, nope. I have better things to do, like tie my shoelaces together or anything like that. So I was busy doing anything else but watching the Hall of Fame game. Because like you said earlier, Dale, it don't mean a thing. Even though they didn't have that swing, it still didn't mean a thing. So
true enough. Meaningless other than, again, testing out your young players and seeing if they're worth it.
Yep.
All the millions and hundreds of thousands you threw at them.
Yep. Yeah.
I digress. We know why you're here.
Yeah, you know, I was just thinking that, Dale. You read my mind.
It was time for Dale to digress. We're reading our listeners' minds. Would you get on to some radio at some point in this show? Of course we will. three wonderful tales about ESP, mind reading, and other forms of mental communication.
Yes.
And I should know. I'm mental.
It's true. That's true. Aren't we all?
Yes. And a slight change from what we told you Saturday night as far as what tomorrow's going to be, but we'll get into that at the end of tonight's show.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll make you wait. But tonight it's Suspense, CBS Radio Workshop, and
The Mysterious Traveler.
Yes, The Mysterious Traveler, which I'm still looking for here in the playlist. There we go. There it is. Found it. I should know. Good. I am the man who knew everything. That's the title for Mysterious Travel.
Ah, yes. Yes, it is. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then...
Interesting tales about mind readers, because most of them are kind of fake. But some of them seem to be able to read what other people are thinking. So it does make just the fact that there are some that can do it to make it just a wee bit interesting there.
Yeah. You mean what's his name from Plan 9? Criswell. Oh. You mean Criswell was a fake?
I didn't say he was a fake. No, I did not. I did not. You never know about them. You never know about them aliens. That's the thing. Because sometimes they can be faking it. Sometimes they can really do it, you know?
Yeah. Now, I believe, at least in the film Ed Wood, they paint Criswell out to be a fakey. He was just a showman. Just a showman.
Well, and that happens, too. We're going to have a few of those shows over the weekend as well.
Excellent. We'll get to view all aspects of mind reading. And... I don't know.
You know what would be interesting if you're wondering where we should go first? The CBS Radio Workshop is worked up almost like a documentary, although it's not really a documentary. But it's kind of interesting how they do with the report on ESP.
So documentary kind of style, sort of.
Yeah, sort of. And it's got cool people. It's got so many good people, Parley Bear and William Conrad, and even Dawes Butler, I believe, is in there. So all kinds of great names that joined the CBS Radio Workshop.
Those are just some of my favorite radio voices. I mean, you can't help but like William Conrad, but Dawes Butler could do a lot. He could do a lot.
Oh, yes. Yep.
All right.
Cartoons, radio to radio. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a good a place to start as any, I think, Dave, with CBS Radio Workshop. This one's entitled Report on ESP. ESP.
Yes, on ESP. Oh, I do have an S on there. Sorry about that. ESP, yes. ESP. Oh, ESP. Yeah. ESP. If you try to pronunciate it, that's how it looks. Yes.
Yes.
Report on ESP. Yes.
Yes. Originally broadcast.
Episode number 7 broadcast. March the 9th of 1956.
Ooh.
Star. Wavy lines.
Goats.
Square.
7. 7. 3.
Gerbils? No, we don't have any gerbils.
CBS Radio and its 217 affiliated stations present the CBS Radio Workshop, radio's distinguished series dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind. Tonight, report on ESP, a study of clairvoyance, telepathy, and extrasensory perception taken from actual case records. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. John McIntyre. Extrasensory perception, clairvoyance, telepathy, precognition. These are the laboratory words. But in everyday life, you and I are faced with a multitude of strange occurrences. Item. A man is about to board a certain airliner. Suddenly, on a hunch, he turns back to the ticket window and changes to another flight. An hour later, the plane he would have been on crashes into a mountainside. Item. A mother suddenly and unaccountably breaks into tears at the moment her son is killed 1,000 miles away. Reason? Unknown. Unexplained.
Cross. Where?
Today, modern scientists are delving deeper and deeper into these mysteries. In the science laboratory of a great university, a girl sits at a table and draws cards from an automatic shuffling machine. On the face of each card is one of 5 possible designs. A star, a circle, a cross, a square, 3 wavy lines. Without looking at the cards, the girl tries to identify the designs by mental impressions. By clairvoyance. At another table, a man watches dice tumble about in a revolving cage. The man calls out a number.
Six.
The dice are cast. The number is six. At still another table, an experimenter stares at a photograph of a tree and tries to project the mental image of this tree to an artist at a drawing board in the next room. These are only a few of the experiments by which modern science hopes to probe into these unexplained phenomena, to solve one of life's greatest riddles.
Mr. McIntyre, may I interrupt for just a moment?
Certainly.
My name is Lawrence Dobkin.
Mr. Dobkin?
Now, it's my contention most of these things can be explained. Properly investigated with adequate controls, science can show a perfectly normal logical explanation for almost any of these so-called psychic phenomena.
I see.
Excuse me, Mr. McIntyre. I'm Russell Thorson, and I'd like to ask Mr. Dobkin a question.
Well, go right ahead, Mr. Thorson.
Mr. Dobkin, do you feel that science has been able to determine by what means certain men and women are able to consult a forked stick and discover water far underground?
You mean a water dowser?
Yes.
Oh, well, that's a superstition that goes back to the Middle Ages.
I believe it's more than a superstition. I believe it's extrasensory perception.
Oh?
Gentlemen, may I make a suggestion?
Certainly, Mr. McIntyre.
The workshop has included the case of a water dowser in tonight's report. For case number one, we have invited a gentleman who can give us an eyewitness account of how a water dowser works. Mr. Robert Ballin.
To begin with, let me say that my experience is limited to the method used by one particular dowser, Mr. Henry Gross, game warden of Biddeford, Maine, probably the country's best-known dowser. Two books have been written about him by Kenneth Roberts, author of such bestsellers as Northwest Passage and Oliver Wiswell. As a result of reading of Mr. Roberts' books on Henry Gross, I decided to employ him to find water on my farm, which is just outside Manchester, Vermont. Shortly after I bought the farm, in the fall of 1954, the spring that supplied all my water suddenly went dry. Some of my neighbors said nothing could be done about it. Some said I should call in a geologist and try to drill a well. Instead, I got in touch with Kenneth Roberts and Mr. Henry Gross. I asked if Mr. Gross would be willing to come over from Maine and douse my farm. He said he would for a fee of $500 in expenses, and a day or so later, he drove up to my front door. He was a man of about 60, a little less than medium height, quiet, soft-spoken country gentleman. I invited him into the house for a cup of coffee, and Mr. Gross explained the conditions that I must agree to.
Now, Mr. Ballin, if I tell you where to dig your well, you must dig right there at that spot, and not maybe off a few feet north or south.
Yes, I understand that, Mr. Gross.
And don't bring in one of those big bulldozers for the digging.
Oh?
Oh, machine's too heavy. But nice earth down so tight that it'd crush the veins and the water off in a new direction.
Yes, I could see that it might.
All right, we can get started.
Most of my farm is on a hillside with a good deal of natural growth. As we walked along, Mr. Gross pulled up a goldenrod plant and bent it into the shape of a letter V. He took one fork of the branch in each hand and held the point directly in front of him in a horizontal position. He aimed slowly to the right, then to the left. Suddenly, the branch dipped downward.
Uh-huh. Yes, looks like your old spring, the one that dried out, is straight up the hill.
I didn't tell you where it was, did I?
Oh, didn't need to. That's where my rod says it is. That's why it dipped.
Well, in other words, if the rod points down, that indicates water?
Mm-hmm. Or if I'm asking the rod a question, a dip means yes. If it doesn't dip, that's no.
Can the rod tell how near we are to the spring?
I'll ask it. How far away is the old spring? More than 100 yards?
We waited a moment, and then the rod dipped again.
More than 200 yards?
Another pause, then another dip.
More than 500 yards.
This time it was motionless.
Seems to be less than 500. Is it 450 yards? Is it 460 yards?
The questions continued until the rod indicated the old spring was 458 yards up the hill. We then faced off the distance and found it to be 457 yards. Now, considering that a man's stride cannot be exact, the rod's accuracy was phenomenal.
You know why this spring went dry? It was off on a tributary, a And this long drought parched it out.
You think the main vein is still flowing?
Mm-hmm. Just a question of finding it.
We worked our way down the slope until the divining rod dipped again. Then Mr. Gross began walking back and forth and asking the rod questions. Finally, we had worked ourselves almost up to my back door. And then Mr. Gross laid the rod aside.
Mr. Ballin, you've got a good vein. It comes down from the top of that hill, about 20 feet wide. The deepest part is 7 feet. And behind your house, it rises to within 4 feet of the surface.
Huh?
Now, this is the place to dig. You'll find it's excellent drinking water.
Fine. It's only 4 feet. I can dig it myself.
Sure. Be good exercise.
Mr. Gross, two or three times while you were working, you seemed to break into perspiration and tremble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it happens now and then. Picks a little out of you when you feel the water.
You say feel?
Well, that's the only way I can describe it.
Well, then you must be able to find the water without using a divining rod.
I do sometimes, but the rod is a help.
Well, tell me, do you think other dowsers feel water the same way you do?
Can't say, but I do know that most of us are outdoor folks. We're at home in the woods and fields. I think that's important, very important.
I followed Mr. Gross's instructions and started digging in the spot that he had indicated. The top earth was dry and caked, but at about 18 inches, the soil was damp. At 2 feet, it was moist. At 3 feet, water seeped into the hole. As far as we could tell, the water vein was exactly at the depth that Mr. Gross had predicted.
And now, I'd like to present in person the gentleman who participated in this remarkable phenomenon, Mr. Robert W. Ballin, the vice president of the world's largest advertising agency, the J. Walter Thompson Company. Mr. Ballin.
Thank you, Mr. McIntyre.
Would you care to make any comments on this case?
No, I don't think so, except to say I realize that my experience with Mr. Henry Gross was quite impossible, except for one thing. It actually happened through no other device than one man's unusual powers.
Thank you, Mr. Ballin. And you might be interested to know that in preparing this program, the workshop has inquired as to Mr. Henry Gross's recent activities as a water dowser. He has been employed by the city of Fredericksburg, Texas, by landowners on the island of St. Croix in the Virgin Islands, by such firms as Bristol-Myers Chemical Laboratories, the A.C. Lawrence Leather Company, a subsidiary of Swift & Company, by two large electronic factories in New Jersey, and by Canada's largest munitions plant.
Excuse me, Mr. McIntyre. May I just make a comment?
Certainly, Mr. Dobkin.
Thank you. Now, science has investigated water dowsing. It appears that when that rod twists and dips in the dowser's hands, well, that's actually caused by an unconscious muscular action. Now, if that's correct, there's no mystery about it.
But there is. There most certainly is.
In what way, Mr. Thorson?
Well, even if the dowser should control the rod by this unconscious muscular action, what is it that affects his muscles? If the dowser has some strange affinity for water, how does he feel it?
Well, no,
and how is it that Mr. Gross, over a flowing vein of water, can hold two dowsing rods, each slightly off-center, and have one rod work frontward and the other backward? Muscles can't do that.
Well, but now you're getting off into the supernatural.
The supernatural, or the natural, in a way not yet understood by science. In every era since the age of ice and of the mastodon, man has believed in the miraculous. He turned to the witch doctors, the soothsayers, to the astrologers, the magicians, to the frauds and the cunning cheats. Again and again, his faith was betrayed, and yet he believed. He believed because there was something, something that was beyond his knowledge. In the Bible, there are miracles. Belshazzar feasted with 1,000 nobles, and a hand appeared and wrote on the wall, Mene, Mene, Tekel, Upharsin. And in that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain. Pharaoh dreamed a dream of 7 fat years and 7 lean years. Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, slept and saw a vision of himself humbled as unto the beasts of the field. What are these dreams, these visions?
To be exact, sir, they're phenomena that come under the heading of precognition. That is to say, the knowing of an event before it actually
happens.
Well,
now, just a minute.
Yes, Mr. Dunn.
At times, you know, science finds it difficult to accept biblical stories as literal fact. They are very effective, yes, as literature. But we can't possibly prove that these things actually did occur.
Nor can we prove that they did not.
Yes, sir. Well, all right. Now we're quibbling.
How about some modern examples? Would you accept them?
That depends on the quality of the evidence. We all know that certain people are given to telling some very remarkable things, which are either pure imagination or events that have been poorly observed and wrongly interpreted.
Mr. Dobkin, I doubt if you would charge fraud or mistake in the two cases I'm proposing. They're both a matter of public record. Mr. McIntyre, would you please?
With pleasure. Case number two, which might be called precognition. The year was 1858. The Mississippi River boat, Pennsylvania, was laying over at St. Louis. Among the crew were Henry Clemens and his older brother Sam. Samuel Clemens, who would one day write his way to fame under the pen name of Mark Twain. While the steamboat loaded cargo, Sam went ashore to stay overnight at the home of his sister, Pamela. Early the following morning, Pamela was awakened by a noise downstairs and a voice.
Henry! Henry!
Pamela reached for her robe and hurried downstairs. She entered the sitting room to find her brother Samuel staring wildly about.
Sam, what are you doing up at this hour?
It seems so real.
What?
I was so sure, but I jumped out of bed and came down to look at him.
Sam.
When he wasn't here, I thought they'd moved him.
Who, Sam? Moved who?
Henry. He was dead.
Oh, Sam, you were just having another one of your nightmares.
It was as real as you are, Pamela. I saw Henry stretched out here in this sitting room. He was in a metal coffin. There was a bouquet on his chest. White flowers. All white. Except for one red rose in the center. It was so vivid.
Sam, it was just a dream.
Yes.
A few weeks later, on June 13th, 60 miles below Memphis, the boilers of the steamboat Pennsylvania exploded. Among the 160 dead was Henry Clemens. In a Memphis warehouse, the victims were laid out in a long line of wooden coffins. There was but one metal coffin. Samuel Clemens stood beside it and gazed down at his brother's body. On the chest was a bouquet of white flowers, all white, except for one red rose in the center.
Ooh, one rose. Part one.
I wonder if it was Yellow Rose of Texas, something like that.
She's the only gal I love. Anyway,
interesting little documentary style program here tonight. Started kicking off our programs.
You know, I was sitting here thinking and wondering, and it's been years since I even thought about this, but if they're going to discuss Edgar Casey. Edgar Casey was and he was a lot of things, but he ended up being a psychic, kind of well known. In fact, I went once to Virginia Beach, and there is a museum/study center dedicated to him. And the weird thing was, I remember, you know, they test your clairvoyance and stuff, if you like, when you're there. And they have these cards that you try to project to someone else, a series of cards with various shapes and things on them. The same cards that were used in Ghostbusters 2, I think it was, which is the one where he was shocking the one guy. Even when he got it right, he kept shocking him.
Oh, yeah, I think that was 2. Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
I think that was 2, and the cards they used were the same cards they were using at the Edgar Casey Museum. Pretty interesting. Look him up. Casey is spelled oddly, C-A-Y-C-E.
Oh, that is odd.
My wife knew of him well. She's interested in a lot of paranormal type things. I don't know if you'd consider clairvoyance paranormal. Some people think it's science.
I would say it's paranormal. Yes, I would say it's paranormal. But again, the science is more of a proven thing.
Yeah.
Paranormal is things that are really not very easily proven.
Yeah. And for the time being, I think it falls into paranormal. But there's some people who approach it as a science. Some people think that Casey was more of a Christian mystic. He was into Christian mysticism. Mystic. He was very religious throughout his life, in spite of these alleged powers. And he reported many interesting experiences with the dead and the angelic. So look him up. Pretty interesting guy.
The spelling of that last name again?
C-A-Y-C-E.
C-A-Y-C-E. Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds like fun.
Yep.
Interesting.
And Virginia Beach is a good place to spend the last 20 years of your life, let me tell you. Weather-wise compared to Ohio. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, but you know what? We don't have hurricanes here, and we don't have massive earthquakes, and we don't have an occasional tornado. We can't even say we have a lot of snowstorms lately. You know, we have like two nice snows a year, and that's about it now.
Yeah, Dave and I remember a time when we would get pelted with the snow. The 60s,
the snow and
the 70s.
I remember when I was working a dishwasher at York Steakhouse, we had like something like 13 days in a row or something like that where it was below zero. And that's not something that usually happens anymore.
Yeah, and he means without the wind chill. For those of you that are in the north that phrase, that's without the wind chill.
Right.
With the wind chill, you're probably at negative 30, 40 at times.
At times, yeah. The wind joins in with all the fun, and it doesn't take long for you to get this nasty thing called frostbite if you're not careful, yeah.
Yeah, lovely thing called a lake that lets all that cold air come over from Canada. Thanks,
Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah, first they're going to give us this, the ice, then they're going to give us the smoke. Thanks, Canada.
Yeah, next it'll be anthrax. Who knows?
I thought they were more polite than that. I'm telling you.
Yeah, oh boy, I mean it. But a great program, but you knew we were going to say that. with the report on ESP from CBS Radio Mystery Theater. And the goat.
Case number 3. 7 years later, in the second week of April, 1865, another man dreamed a dream. Afterward, he told it to his wife and to his best friend.
There seemed to be a death-like stillness about me. Then I heard subdued sobs, as if a number of people were weeping. I thought I left my bed and wandered downstairs. I went from room to room. No living person was in sight, but the same mournful sounds of distress met me as I passed along. I was both puzzled and alarmed. I kept on until I arrived at the east room. There before me was a catafalque, on which rested a corpse wrapped in funeral vestments. Around it a throng of people, some gazing mournfully upon the corpse, others weeping pitifully. I asked one of the soldiers there, "Who is dead in the White House?" "The president," he said. "He was killed by an assassin."
That same week, in April, the man who dreamed that dream, Abraham Lincoln, attended a play at Ford's Theater. Later, his body lay in state in the East Room.
Yes.
Well, gentlemen?
Well, first I'd like to ask Mr. Dobkin if he questions the validity of those two dreams.
No, Mr. Thorson. I accept them as correct statements of actual events.
Thank you.
But now, tell me, have you never had a dream of dying or falling downstairs or being in an auto accident?
Oh, I imagine I have.
Oh, I know I have. Well, let's suppose that everybody in the United States has had at least one dream of accident or of disaster. That's 165 million dreams. Now, the simple law of averages guarantees that some of those dreams will come true.
I think this is a good time to quote Dr. Sigmund Freud. He said, "If one regards oneself as a skeptic, it is well from time to time to be skeptical about one's skepticism." And on clairvoyant dreams, he said, just a minute. Mr. McIntyre, would you oblige me again?
Certainly.
In Vienna, in 1925, Dr. Sigmund Freud, the great pioneer in the science of psychoanalysis, had this to say.
If there are such things as telepathic messages, the possibility cannot be dismissed of their reaching someone during sleep. The further possibility arises that telepathic messages received in the course of a day may only be dealt with during a dream of the following night.
I hope you paid particular attention to that last part, Mr. Dobkin. There is a possibility that telepathic messages might come to a person only in a dream.
Yes, I got that point.
All right. Doesn't that suggest something to you? At the very time of President Lincoln's dream, John Wilkes Booth was planning his assassination. Using Freud's theory, Lincoln might have picked up Booth's murderous thoughts by telepathy. Therefore, the dream.
Well, it's a startling idea, certainly, but again, there's no possible proof.
The world is filled with things difficult to prove. Their mere existences are proof.
Well,
we scientists have spent centuries studying the animal world. And what do we come up with? Mystery.
Item, the homing pigeon.
The homing pigeon can find its way back to its home loft over distances up to 100 miles. In some cases, the distance has approached 1,000 miles. Means by which the bird determines latitude, longitude, curvature of the earth are known.
Item, household pets.
Dogs and cats have been separated from their owner and have returned on foot over distances of many hundreds of miles. Bobby, a collie, traveled almost 2,000 miles between the states of Indiana and Oregon. Means of determining direction, unknown.
Item, the European eel.
The European eel swims from inland rivers into the Atlantic, makes its way 2,000 miles to a deep off the West Indies. There it spawns and dies. The baby eels born off the West Indies return across the Atlantic and ascend the same rivers from which their parents had come years before. Method of finding their way? Unknown.
Well, this is all very interesting, Mr. Thorson, but these are things that we call instinct.
Yes, and what is instinct? Can science explain it?
Well, we're investigating it.
And we still don't know. I say that instinct includes clairvoyance and telepathy at work at an animal level.
Yes, but that is simply argument.
Mr. McIntyre, may we have the case of Lady the Wonder Horse?
Certainly. Case number 4. An example of clairvoyance, as told by Mr. Stuart Wyatt.
Well, it was back in the fall of 1950, late October. My wife Nancy and our 12-year-old boy Billy and I went up to spend a weekend at our mountain cabin. This was back in eastern Tennessee on the shore of a small lake. Late Saturday afternoon, Billy went out in the sailboat. I told him not to because it looked like there was a storm blowing up, but, well, you know how kids are. But, well, anyway, the wind kept getting stronger and stronger, and Nancy and I got worried. We saw Billy trying to take in sail, but he couldn't do it fast enough. Then the mast broke and the boat capsized. I swam out to the wreckage, but there was no sign of Billy. So we telephoned the nearest forest ranger station, and they sent over a couple of men with a search boat. They couldn't find anything either. That night, in the pouring rain, we had over 200 volunteers combing the woods and the shore. They even brought in bloodhounds. But after 2 days of this, the chief ranger, Anderson, was pretty discouraged.
Well, we've dragged the lake 3 times, Mr. Wyatt, and still nothing. I'm afraid the body must be caught under the ledge or something where our equipment can't reach it. Looks like there's nothing more we can do.
When I told that to my wife, it's a funny thing, Mr. McIntyre. She just suddenly stopped crying. She said, all right, now it's time to try that horse she'd read about. It was supposed to be able to find missing children, and its name was Lady. I told her it was ridiculous, but, well, we'd tried everything else.
The horse which Mrs. Wyatt had read about is Lady, owned by Mrs. C.D. Fonda of Richmond, Virginia. Mr. and Mrs. Wyatt found the 25-year-old mare waiting for them in her barn. In front of her was a strange contrivance of levers and wooden blocks with letters of the alphabet and numbers running from 1 to 10. Following instructions, the Wyatts asked Lady a test question.
Lady, tell me, what was my maiden name?
The horse moved toward one of the levers. She pressed her nose against the lever, and a block with a letter L came into view.
L.
Lee.
Lee, that's right. Lee, Nancy Lee.
Oh, this is impossible. Nobody around here knows your maiden name.
Lady does.
Well.
Lady, is my son Billy alive? Lady?
A.
L.
I. Clyde.
God, oh, this is God.
Lady, lady, where is Billy? Lady, where is Billy? C.
A.
D.
He's cave. He's in a cave.
Mr. and Mrs. Wyatt telephoned from Richmond to Chief Ranger Anderson back in Tennessee. They told him to search for a cave. The following is from the official report of Ranger Anderson.
The Wyatt boy was found in a small cave approximately 1 1/4 miles northeast of the lake. He was unconscious. Dr. Warner gave him a blood transfusion and he was removed to the hospital. When I was able to question him, the Wyatt boy stated these circumstances. After the sailboat capsized and sank, he swam to the nearest shore. While attempting to return home through the woods, he stumbled into an animal trap. The trap broke his left leg, and he began to lose blood. In a state of fright and confusion, he then began to crawl in a direction away from the lake. He discovered the cave and decided to stay there until the rainstorm was over. Sometime during the night, he lost consciousness. He remembered nothing more until reviving in the hospital. He was discharged therefrom on October 28th, fully recovered.
Cases similar to that of the Wyatt boy, in which the horse lady has guided searchers to the recovery of the bodies of missing children, may be read in Newsweek magazine, the issues of October 25th, 1948, December 22nd, 1952, and February 16th, 1953. In Time magazine, issue of December 15th, 1952, in Life magazine, issue of December 22, 1952, and in Popular Mechanics magazine, issue of March, 1952. Yes, the dramatization you just heard was a composite of several such actual cases. Item, Emanuel Swedenborg.
Emanuel Swedenborg, scientist and philosopher in September 1759, saw in a waking dream a disastrous fire which was burning at that very moment in the city of Stockholm, 50 miles away. He specified the houses which were then in flames and gave the correct hour at which the fire was extinguished.
Item, Leo Tolstoy.
In 1910, Count Leo Tolstoy, famous author, sent a message to the Tsar of Russia, the German Kaiser, and the King of England, in which he described his dream of World War I 4 years before it occurred. He stated when the war would begin, where it would be, outlined its horrors, foresaw the League of Nations.
And now, gentlemen, any questions? You, Mr. Thorson?
I rest my case.
You, Mr. Dobkin?
I rest my case.
Wavy lines, star... circle.
A girl sits at a table and draws circle. Cards from an automatic shuffling machine.
Circle.
By the mathematical laws of square. Chance, she should correctly identify, maybe without nine. Looking at the cards, 5 out of every 25 drawn.
Cross.
This girl has
square.
Scored as high as 9 and 15 star. Cards consecutively correct.
Star.
In one such experiment, the score
cross.
Has exceeded the laws of chance by odds
square.
Of 400,000 to 1.
Star.
In still other cases, the odds have risen to the astronomical ratio of 1 trillion and 1 quadrillion to 1.
6.
In laboratories and universities
6.
Throughout the United States and Europe and South
7.
Africa, the research goes on.
12.
New light is being shed
7.
On the phenomena of telepathy and clairvoyance.
2.
The day
5.
May be not far distant
5.
When science will establish the principles
11.
Of extrasensory perception and its
9.
Operation as firmly as the laws which govern nuclear fission.
Star.
The ideas advanced by Professor Sigmund Freud and by other
square.
Investigators may yet
circle.
Be proven fact.
Circle.
That long before man's first crude
89.
Stammerings, long
star.
Before he first chiseled his ideographs
star.
Into stone,
star.
Man communicated to fellow man
star.
Through thought.
Star.
Tonight, the CBS Radio Workshop has presented Report on ESP, directed by Jack Johnstone. Research and script by Leonard St. Clair. John McIntyre was the narrator. The cast included Lucille Meredith, Lillian Baeth, Don Diamond, Lawrence Dobkin, Russell Thorson,
Stacey Harris, Robert Ballin, Forrest Lewis, Sam Edwards, Raymond Burr, and Bert Holland. Original music for tonight's program was composed and conducted by Amerigo Marino, with vocal by Norma Zimmer. The CBS Radio Workshop is produced in Hollywood by William Frug. This is Hugh Douglas inviting you to join us again next week when we present Cops and Robbers, a unique experiment in which real-life detectives use actual police methods to solve a fictional crime. Presented on the CBS Radio Workshop. On the New York Philharmonic Symphony broadcast, presented by most of these same stations this Sunday, you'll hear the second of two All Mozart programs. Bruno Walter will conduct the Mozart Symphony No. 25 in G major, and then we'll present the rarely performed Mozart Requiem. That's this Sunday on CBS Radio. Stay tuned for 5 minutes of CBS Star. News, to be followed on most of these stations by The Jack Parsons Show.
5, 5, 11.
America listens most to 9, the CBS Radio Network.
9, 3, 7, 8.
I keep going
anymore. Numbers.
That's
careful,
right.
Careful throwing them numbers around.
I know. If CW were here, I'll bet you she could count, but I can't.
Yes, she can. She cares. Interesting. This music here, Dale, is put together by the guy who did all the music for Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. The director was from Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Russell Thorson, as he was in there, is actually from I Love a Mystery. He was Jack Packard in I Love a Mystery. So they use some of the top radio talent on this CBS Radio Workshop, as well as Raymond Burr and all these guys.
He gives me the chills. Raymond Burr.
Raymond Burr.
Oh. Hi, CW. We see you there.
Oh, hello, hello, hello. Just akin to the homing pigeon, I couldn't help myself but find my way back to Erie House.
I'm very, very pleased that you did, as we...
thank you.
Are you familiar with Edgar Casey?
Yes, the dreaming prognosticator, yes.
Yes.
Mr. Casey, who always fell asleep and, you know, predicted everything. Definitely have heard of him, most assuredly. What a guy. Strange. I don't know. Didn't they have lottery back then? I mean, I fall asleep and I say winning numbers, winning numbers, winning numbers.
Yeah, tonight would be exceptionally good now, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it was over $1 billion there, yeah.
Yeah.
Or 1.25 billion the last time I looked. It's probably now 1.4 something billion. A mere pittance.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. I'd take that mere pittance.
Yeah, we could probably
take a pittance from that pittance.
We could expand our listening audience with that kind of money.
We could.
We'll pay you to listen. No. Please. Oh, please. Like that pleading clown picture I have. Of Lon Chaney.
Oh, yes. I think I may squander a dollar or two on that prognostication. Let's see. We're looking into the tarot cards, registering the crystal ball. I don't have a horse. Does anyone have a horse around to tap out the numbers?
Well, that last horse in this last program was, what did it write, or how did it give answers, like with letters and stuff?
They spelled out a name.
What did they give it, a big pen?
No kidding.
put them in the inkwell and let them dance around a little? I don't know how he spelled it out.
Did they teach him math?
Actually, there was IBM. Was it IBM? No, NCR. They did cash register stuff. They had this horse that could type. It was a typing horse. Yeah,
a typing horse. Hmm. Who knew?
Yeah, I'm surprised they don't have. Yeah, who knew? I mean, I'm surprised they don't have more horses at the cash register since they don't want to pay people enough money for those jobs.
That's right.
Yeah.
If anybody takes taken off with the goods, they're going to get kicked in the teeth. You might not want to rob from the horse, okay? That's all I'm saying.
No. Don't rob from the horse. No.
I wouldn't.
Don't rob from Mr. Ed.
I don't know about them horses. They take their work seriously.
Mr. Ed was quite serious.
Yes, he was.
But yes, I'm enjoying this immensely, all these different things. I mean, since our congressional people have nothing better to do with themselves to believe a few individuals who say yes, UFOs, now known as UAPs, Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon, are real. Okay, so, hey, everybody, how about giving us a ride, you know, boldly going where no one has gone before, at least I've never been there. Hello, trip around the moon.
Hello. I'm Mr. Ed.
There he is. I knew he was around here somewhere.
Outstanding.
A little slow on the draw, but I got him out. I let him out of the stable.
Always good to have a talking horse around.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, with a lot of peanut butter.
Yes. Peanut butter, apples, hey. Peanut butter was good for the monkeys, or did they give them gum on Lance Link? I don't know.
Where's Gar when you need him?
I don't know.
Gar. He's still on the mend.
He does a lot of Lancelot Link as his pre-features sometimes.
Great show. What's more fun than a bunch of monkeys?
Yes.
Barrel of monkeys. Where shall we go next? We got suspense and we got mysterious traveler.
Ooh, let's go to the mysterious traveler.
Well, hop on that train,
always a fun ride on the mysterious traveler.
And indeed it is. This one's got a great title: "The Man Who Knew Everything,"
which is not about me. And comes to episode number 325, Dale. It comes to us from December 9th of 1951.
Good stuff.
The Mutual Broadcasting System presents The Mysterious Traveler, written, produced, and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Cogan, and starring one of radio's foremost actors, Chuck Webster, in The Man Who Knew Everything. This is The Mysterious Traveler inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can, as we join forces with a man who had unique powers which enabled him to accomplish tremendous good or tremendous evil. I call his story, "The Man Who Knew Everything." The story begins in a small, very expensive nightclub, the Crystal Club. The room is crowded with men and women in evening dress, there to see and hear the star attraction, Randor the Mystic, mind reader extraordinary. In a small office with the door locked, Nick Thompson, owner of the club, and his press agent, Jerry Fenton, are in conference.
I don't like it, Jerry. I tell you, I don't like it. The grand jury is all set to bring in an indictment against me. The heat's on, and my contacts with City Hall are no good anymore.
Well, it seems to me, Nick, about 5 years ago, there was another grand jury camping on your trail. But all of a sudden, they lost interest, right?
Yes, that's right.
I sort of heard rumors that those grand jurors got a few anonymous phone calls suggesting what might happen if Nick Thompson was indicted.
They did. That's when they lost interest. But it won't work now, Jerry.
You're not turning soft, I hope.
Could I handle the gambling monopoly in this town if I was soft? You know me better than that.
Just the same if I were in your shoes.
Yeah, if you were in my shoes, what would you do, smart guy?
I'd make a few changes, Nick. I'd consolidate a couple of, well, should we call them business rivals?
You mean you'd try to take over Nobby Williams' rackets? Maybe Fat Boy Latimer's? Is that what you mean?
That's just what I mean. I've been wondering for 2 years why you let him alone.
You sap. Times have changed. This investigation proved it. Kefauva started it. Now every local prosecutor is starting a cleanup campaign of his own.
So?
Public attitude is different, too. I started putting the heat on Williams and Latimer now. This town would blow up right in all our faces.
You're wrong, Nick. Get strong enough and nobody can touch you, not even the public. Listen, if you controlled Rocky's mob and the Fat Boys organization, you'd be so powerful the governor himself wouldn't dare interfere with you.
Big talk for a pencil pusher. I asked you what's the dope down at headquarters, not for advice on how to run my business.
And I've told you. Down at headquarters, they're waiting to see which way the wind's blowing. If you can blow it your way hard enough, they'll coast along with you. But if you sit around chewing your nails until the grand jury finds a true bill against you, all of a sudden you won't have any friends.
Talk, talk, talk. Give me a concrete suggestion. That's what I want.
Must be some way to get at those grand jurors. Everybody has something in his life that he doesn't want known.
Those jurors are a hand-picked blue ribbon bunch. To pick up anything against them, you'd have to read their minds.
Read their minds? Very interesting idea, Nick. Maybe Randor the Mystic could do it. If you put it to him, right?
That Oriental faker. He's got a good act, but it's just an act.
Oh, you're wrong. I tried him out last night. He read my mind, Nick. Told me exactly what I was thinking. Including a few thoughts that strictly weren't for publication.
Sucker. It's just a trick.
Okay, if you want to believe that. Well, if you're through weeping on my shoulder about the grand jury, let's step out and watch Randor put on his act.
No need to. I can switch on my loudspeaker in here and hear everything going on outside.
Very convenient.
It comes in handy.
And so...
Yeah, there he is.
Gentlemen, I shall demonstrate the mystic powers which I bring from the sacred Orient. I shall not ask you to write questions on a piece of paper. Just think them. That is all. Think them, and I shall answer them.
What hooey. But they eat it up.
I tell you, it's not hooey.
I perceive a thought. A certain gentleman is wondering if his wife knows where he was last night. No, sir, she does not. But please, such trivial thoughts, I must not waste my powers on them. Ah, here is something else. It's just a test, but it may convince you. The lady in the red dress wishes me to tell her what her automobile license number was in 1945. It was YX4590, am I correct? She is nodding.
Yeah, how do you explain that except by mind reading?
She's a stooge, of course. Let's shut it off.
The lady in the red dress happens to be a friend of mine. I asked her to try out Randor with that question. She's no stooge.
Listen, if he's not a fake, why doesn't he use his mind reading to make some real dough? Could clean up with the races and the stock market.
Oh, the Swami's a dope. He says his power mustn't be used for personal gain. He sends all his earnings to the famine sufferers in India.
Oh, hooey. Ah, forget Randor. What are we going to do about the grand jury?
Well, I'll think of something. Oh, by the way, where does Randor live?
311 West Street. Why?
Just curious. Well, I'll drift along, Nick, and Meanwhile, I'll work on your problem. From the nightclub, Jerry Fenton went directly to 311 West Street. There, he located Randor the Mystic's small apartment and let himself in with a picklock. Once inside, he turned on a light and began searching the place. A thick manuscript in a desk drawer attracted his attention, and he settled himself to read it. But he was still reading an hour later when, unexpectedly, the door opened.
Who's here? Who's in my lodging?
Hello, Randor. Home early, aren't you?
Fenton, the press agent. For what purpose have you broken into my room?
Well, I've been meaning to have a little talk with you. I thought I'd drop in early and wait.
You are lying. You have my manuscript in your hands. The fruit of my life's experiences.
Yes. Interesting reading. Saves me a lot of trouble.
Give it to me and go.
I don't think so, Randor. You see, in Chapter 5 here, you've outlined exactly how you manage your mind-reading trick. Very interesting. Now I savvy those cough drops you're always chewing. They're doped with a drug which sharpens your mind so that you can really catch what someone else is thinking.
That is true. It is a secret known only to qualified practitioners of the art of yogi. It is not for the multitude.
One person's no multitude. Meaning myself.
No. You must not tamper with such powers. Your knowledge is not great enough.
It's great enough to get me the right stuff from a drugstore to make a mind reader out of me, too. That's all I need, Randor.
No, I read your thoughts. They are evil. You wish power, wealth for yourself. You intend to use criminal methods to get them.
So what? Do you know a better way?
I cannot permit it.
You can't stop it, old man. I've got the secret now. That's all there is to it.
You must forget it or else you must die.
You're going to kill me with that little knife? You're making me laugh, Randor. Now, take
no.
it.
No!
There. But I won't use it on you. I have a better idea. This pillar. I hold it over your face for a couple of minutes. Well, tomorrow the cops will think your ticker just gave out.
No, you dare not. This power you have stolen, it will turn on you. Men's thoughts are not to be trusted. You will discover...
Okay, Randor.
Henson, you must not...
Sorry, Randor. Nothing stopping me now. I'm on my way to the top.
Jerry.
Oh, hello, Rocky. Nick in his office.
Yeah. He wants to see you. He's been wondering where you've been the last week.
Yeah, I've been busy.
He's kind of sore.
Yeah, that's too bad. I'll go in and cheer him up. Hello, Nick.
Fenton. Where the devil have you been?
Last place you'd look for me. Been down to the courthouse.
The courthouse?
Listening to the grand jury hearings.
Why weren't you where I could get a hold of you? Randall the Mystic conked out last week. Heart attack in his apartment.
Yeah, so I read in the papers.
How to get another attraction fast. And I needed you to work up the publicity.
But I've been working on a more important problem. The grand jury's decided to indict you.
How do you know that? I mean, are you positive?
Yes, I'm positive. That's the problem I've been working on.
What do you mean?
I can fix that grand jury if I want to.
You can? How?
That's my secret. Now, the question is, what's it worth to you?
$5,000 cash on the line.
$5,000. Is that all 10 years in prison is worth to you?
Look, Jerry. You're working for me, understand? If you can fix the grand jury for me, I'm willing to give you a bonus. But you can't hold me up.
I want an equal partnership in all your operations. This club, your gambling concessions, everything.
A half interest? You must be nuts.
Well, if you go to jail, you lose everything. Well, is it a deal?
You're getting some big ideas, Jerry.
You don't know how big. Confidentially, Nick, I expect to be governor of this state someday.
Governor? You?
And I may go beyond that. But right now, the question is, am I in for a half interest or not?
Okay. Deliver the goods and it's a deal.
All right, I'll start right now. I have here the names and phone numbers of three members of the grand jury. I'm going to phone them. You can listen in on the extension. The first one I'm going to call is Jones, the foreman. Come on, listen in, Nick, but don't say anything.
Okay.
Hello, hello, is this Mr. Jones? Well, this is a friend calling, Mr. Jones. I have some advice for you. Tomorrow, when the grand jury meets, you're going to prevent it from indicting a certain Nick Thompson. No, no, I'm not crazy. I'm just telling you, if you know what's good for you, you'll see no indictment is voted. Now, listen, Jones, let's get down to cases. You're a respectable citizen, but like a lot of other citizens, you've got woman trouble. Yeah. There's a little brunette in Boston you sort of drop in on every once in a while. Well, shall I give you her address? 91753 Boylston Street. Yeah. You'd like your wife to know about her? And the newspapers? Well, I thought not. Okay, see that Nick Thompson doesn't get indicted, that's all.
You sounded scared. You had the goods on him, Jerry.
Sure, I had the goods on him. And that's a little secret he thought no other living soul knew about.
How did you find out?
Never mind that. Well, I got to call a couple of more jurors who also have their little secrets. And then we can talk, Nick.
Pretty sure they're going to be talking about money.
You think?
Crispy, green, ill-gotten gains. Sometimes the best kind.
Yeah. Cabbage, lettuce, cold cash, Babe Ruth trading card. I don't know. That's worth money. I don't know.
There you go. Action Comics number one. Hey, while we're at it, have either of you ever had any precognitive experiences?
I have not.
Would you? I was told when I was
would you like to? I'm selling the hair cream for it or whatever. I don't know.
You're selling the hair cream, are you? Okay.
I don't know. Yeah, it's precognitive hair cream, I guess.
Precognitive.
That's what the guy I bought it from told me. I don't know. I don't imagine he would have lied.
I can't say that I have.
Precognitive cream.
And hair gel. But actually, you should go in your basement or in the kitchen and whip up some precognitive elixir. It seems to be that's what the Swami was using until the gangster found him out.
Ooh.
A little bit of this, a little bit of that. Extra sriracha sauce on the side. A touch of this, a little bit of that. A hint of turmeric. A touch of that. Some wild honey.
I don't want no tumor stuff on my food.
Yeah. Turmeric. Turmeric.
It's not a tumor.
It's not a tumor. It's not a tumor.
At all.
You're watching too many movies, Dale.
I think so.
Or not enough.
That could be it.
I vote not enough. Yeah.
I vote not enough.
Yeah. I'll go to my local health food store and let's get some, mix this up in a power potion, a little vitamin B, a little vitamin A, a little vitamin XYZ3, stir, and then just have a bag of potato chips.
Yeah, I was going to ask, do vegetarians have junk food?
Well, yes.
What do you mean, sadly? I don't understand. It's a good thing.
Well, I mean, it's still calories you don't need. It's sadly.
Oh, don't be silly.
They're
needed.
No, but you add some extra protein or extra vitamins. This is, you'll get a health food store bag of potato chips, and they'll have protein, and they'll throw in some extra calcium and nutritious yeast and stuff in there. But it's still a bag of chips. It's just maybe you get a little bit more health stuff out of it, but still empty calories that you don't need.
Wow. As long as it has some nice monosodium glutamate or some such.
Absolutely. I vote for that.
Oh.
I vote for that.
Red dye number 63 as well. So.
Now you're talking. Now you're talking flavor. Eerie House, the unhealthiest show on Blog Talk. Says the host who's hacking up along. Well, we should probably get cruising along here so we have plenty of time for suspense and some other hilarious hijinks. Yep. And here is then the conclusion of the man who knew everything.
That's my final word, Wentworth. You help quash that indictment or I spill what I know. Now, goodbye. Well, Nick, you feel better now?
Gotta hand it to you, Jerry. You've got those three citizens buffaloed. Now, spill it. How'd you find out?
I hung around the courtroom, reading their minds.
Reading their minds? What kind of guff is that?
No, it's the truth. How else could I know?
I don't know, but if you expect me to believe that mind-reading, Huey...
Look, Nick, before Randor died, he passed on his little secret to me.
Randor? Told you how to read minds?
Well, there's nothing to it except concentration. Of course, you have to be close to whoever you're working on, but that's all.
I don't believe it.
How else would I know that you're still wanted for murder in California?
I'm what?
Pasadena, 1938. Shall I give you the details?
Now, wait a minute. This isn't a gag anymore.
It never was a gag. You see, Nick, you and I are going to get along fine because I have the goods on you. Just sitting here, I've been picking up your most secret thoughts.
In that case, you should have known about this gun, but you didn't.
Yes, I did, but you can't kill me.
You're not human. A bullet won't stop you like it will somebody else.
Sure it will, but that gun is busted. Been busted for weeks. You just neglected to have it fixed.
Well, I'll be... All right, it's busted. Rocky! Rocky Brogan!
Yeah, Nick?
Come in. Close the door.
Sure, Nick.
What's up?
Fenton here. He's gotten a few big ideas. Too big. We're going to have to cut him down to size.
You mean blast him?
He knows too much. And his mouth is too big. Let him have it, Rocky. Right now.
Well, gee, Jerry, you heard what Nick said?
Yeah, I heard him. I guess we aren't friends anymore. So you'd better do as he says. Go ahead, shoot.
Well, if that's how it's gonna be...
Wait a minute. You're pointing that gun at me. Rocky, are you...
Sorry, Nick. Me and Jerry had a talk earlier. I'm working for him now.
You. Good work, Rocky. A partnership idea would never work out anyhow. All right, now, after you've gotten rid of Nick, just start spreading the word to the boys that I'm running things now.
Come in.
Hello, Jerry.
Oh, Rocky. Sit you down.
Thanks. I want to talk to you, Jerry.
Well, I'm rather busy, Rocky, unless it's something important.
It's pretty important. See, the boys are getting restless. They're waiting for you to deliver.
Waiting for me to deliver what?
Well, you know you said you were going to expand, take over Nobby Williams' territory and Fatboy Latimer's.
Well, I'm already doing it, Rocky. I started a week ago.
Yeah, but how? You had a conference with Nobby and the Fat Boy, told him everything would stay just like it was.
Well, that's what I told him, Rocky. It doesn't have to be true.
I don't follow you.
Now, look. At that conference, I learned certain things.
Yes?
Now, never mind how, but I learned. I learned about two murders for which Nobby Williams can get the chair. I discovered enough about Fat Boy Latimer's income tax cheating to get him 10 years at Leavenworth.
You did. But I was there. I didn't hear you.
Never mind what you did or didn't hear. I got the information. I gave it to the authorities days ago. And as soon as they pin it down, Nobby and the Fat Boy will be booted into jail. When that happens, their organizations fall into my lap just like ripe plums.
Yeah, but can you be sure it'll work?
It'll work. And it'll mean we don't have to fire a shot. The public will never know anything's happened. Now, there's only one drawback, though.
Yeah.
It's going to take a little time. The boys will just have to be patient, that's all.
Well, I suppose I can calm them down. But, Jerry,
We
got to have dough. We've been laying low since the big investigation started, not taking in anything. Those boys have got to be paid.
I know. What's our monthly payroll?
About 50 grand.
I need some capital for operations, too. Well, you see, Rocky, a little later I'm going into politics.
Politics?
In fact, I expect to be governor in about 5 years.
Governor? Yeah. You? Jerry, you sure you got all your models?
Listen, Rocky, and get this straight.
Yeah.
I have a way of learning anybody's most closely guarded secrets. Anybody.
Yeah, but Jerry...
I told you about that little deal out in St. Paul, didn't I? The one where you started...
Jerry, not so loud. Somebody might hear. I could get the chair for that.
You will, too, if you step out of line. But tell me, how did I find out about it?
I don't know. This was by magic. I'd have sworn nobody ever...
All right. Call it magic if you want. Now, just think. Suppose I can find out the one thing a man... any man is afraid of having known. Well, then I got a handle over him, haven't I?
I'll say you have.
So I go to all the big politicians, one at a time. I convince them I know their entire past, every dirty deal they've ever been mixed up in.
Well, they'd make you president to keep you quiet.
That's what I'm figuring on. But that's for the future. Right now, I need quick money to operate on. Yeah, I could get it in Wall Street, but big financial deals sometimes take a year to set up.
The boys won't wait that long.
I know. So, you got any suggestions?
Yeah, I do. Something I had my eye on for a long time, only Nick wouldn't let me try it. A payroll stick-up.
Payroll?
Yeah.
Well, maybe... just wants to get going, if it's safe enough.
It'd be a cinch. It's the S&J Company across the river. Every Friday, they send an armored truck to the bank, pick up 125 grand, cart it back. If we could pick off that truck some nice, safe way...
125 grand?
That's right.
All right, Rocky, I'll look into it. And for a beginning, I'm going over to talk to the treasurer of the S&J Company. Yes, I may be able to learn a lot from him.
Yeah, Jerry?
Come in, will you, Rocky?
Right away, Jerry.
Close the door, Rocky. I got some dope for you.
You mean about that payroll job?
That's it. Yeah, it's all set. Now, this is Friday. By 10 p.m., we'll have that payroll.
Have you got it figured to take the armored car?
We don't need to.
Don't need to, but...
For your information, the money is not carried in the armored car. That's a bluff.
A bluff?
The payroll's actually delivered in an old truck marked Tropical Linen Supply Company.
You're kidding.
An hour after the armored car leaves, the laundry truck drives up at the rear of the bank. The driver, he's a little man wearing horn-rimmed glasses, carries in a bundle of clean towels, comes out with a bag of dirty ones. The payroll's hidden among the dirty towels.
How'd you find all that out?
Well, I talked to the S&J treasurer. The rest is my secret.
Okay, Jerry. Okay.
So tonight, follow the laundry truck. Pick it up. Take it to our own garage. Get the payroll, then get rid of the truck and driver. After that, report back to me.
Well, if you can work like this all the time, Jerry.
Yeah.
Why stop at becoming president? The driver of that truck is getting wise. We're following him, Mike. Yeah, he's speeding up a little. Now move up and cut him off. It's time to take him. Okay, swing in. Swing in! Force him to the curb. All right, that does it. I'll take him. You follow. Okay, fella, sit tight. You won't get hurt.
What's the meaning of this? I don't understand.
You will fast enough. And move over. I'm getting in.
But you can't. This is my truck. Gone, huh?
Now, Buster, you and me are going for a nice little ride. I'm the new paymaster. I'm picking up that payroll you've gotten back.
You're crazy. I haven't got any payroll, just dirty towels.
Yeah. We'll see, Buster. We'll see.
Yes, yes, who is it?
It's Rocky Brogan.
Oh, come in, Rocky. Oh, you're back quick. Who's that you got with you?
All right, inside you.
Come on, inside.
You're making a mistake. You're making a terrible mistake.
Rocky, what is this?
This is the driver of the linen supply truck, the one you said carried the payroll.
Well?
We took the truck to the garage. We searched every bag of dirty towels. The money was not there.
It had to be.
I don't know anything about a payroll. This is all an error, really it is. Now, please, let me go.
How about it, Jerry? The boys are saying you pulled a boner.
I'll find out in a hurry. Rocky, you wait outside while I talk to this man.
Okay. But I hope you haven't made any mistake, Jerry. For your sake.
All right now, my friend. We can get the truth.
I've told you the truth. I've told it over and over. I deliver towels. I don't know anything about a payroll. Nothing at all.
I can't be wrong. Yeah, let me see. Where are my cough drops? Here they are. Yeah. Now we can talk. Where is that payroll?
Look, how often must I tell you you're making an awful mistake? If you want money, I've got $10 on me. That...
Well, so that's the answer. Very clever, aren't you?
What do you mean?
The laundry bag with a payroll in it is hidden in a special compartment underneath the floor of that truck. No wonder Rocky couldn't find it.
No. You can't know that. That compartment was my own idea. Nobody in the world but me knows about it.
I know about it. Just as I know anything I need to. Including the fact you're hiding a .25 caliber pistol inside your waistband.
You knew that? You should have done something about it. Now it's too late. I've got you covered.
So you have.
You've got to let me go, do you hear? Or I'll shoot. I'll kill you.
Then shoot. Go ahead, shoot.
I warn you. Let me go or I will shoot.
My friend, you can't shoot. You've never fired a gun in your life. You bought that gun from your brother-in-law 2 years ago just to carry to scare off possible thieves. But you've never even loaded it. You can't shoot because the gun isn't loaded.
How do you know all that?
Because I can read your thoughts. Now give me that gun.
No.
Then we'll get to that pay.
No, I warn you, stand back.
He shot me.
What happened in here? Jerry! He's dead. I killed him. The gun was loaded after all, and I thought it was empty.
All the time I thought it was empty.
This is the mysterious traveler again. Poor Jerry. He was all set to become the greatest man in the world. Now he's just another name in the cemetery. So that's what Brandor, the mystic, meant when he said men's thoughts are not to be trusted. When a man doesn't even know his gun is loaded, what good is it to read his mind? But perhaps Jerry's fate will be a lesson to you. Don't depend on someone else to do your thinking for you. Because sometimes you may find... Oh, you have to get off here. I'm sorry. But I'm sure we'll meet again. I take this same train every week at this same time.
Just heard The Mysterious Traveler. You can enjoy other adventures of The Mysterious Traveler in the Mysterious Traveler magazine. In our cast were Chuck Webster, Santos Ortega, Brett Morrison, and Maurice Tarplin, who played the title role. Original music by Fred Mendelson. All characters in this story were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual persons living or dead was purely coincidental. Tonight, the mysterious traveler salutes radio station WJZM in Clarksville, Tennessee. WJZM today marks its 10th anniversary of service to the Queen City of the Cumberland. Phil Tonkin speaking. This program came to you from New York. For news as it happens, from where it happens, listen to the Mutual Newsreel every weekday evening over most of these same Mutual stations. Mutual Newsreel listeners hear the actual voices of the people who make the news. Recorded on the spot for transmission to you with all the breathtaking drama of news in the making. So for a program of news with dynamic impact, news you hear happen from where it happens, listen to the Mutual Newsreel every weekday evening over most of these same stations. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Pickle, Erie House Radio. And that was
sounds like the gargling gherkin.
Gargling, I won't tell him you said that. I hid him away. I won't tell him you said that. He would take that very personally.
Oh dear, we wouldn't want that.
No, we wouldn't do that. We wouldn't want that. Now that's a gargling gherkin, yeah. Yeah. There.
Yes.
Well, what a wonderful, wonderful show that was. I mean, yeah, you can read people's minds, but people can only tell you in their minds what they think they know.
Yep, and they could be wrong about something, too.
Yeah.
You know how sometimes memories seem to change over time.
Yeah, just because
I don't think we ever really remember. Oh, go ahead, CW. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to just say, just because I think I have $1 million in my bag doesn't mean I have $1 million.
That's not true. I saw it there. You can tell the insurance company. I saw it there.
Oh, would you like to purchase some stock in Erie House?
Yes, yes. Erie House stock. The stock that just goes nowhere.
Yes.
Yep. Almost as good as stock and, buying stock and celery. So, yeah.
Yep. Stock and celery. All righty.
Oh, yes.
Yes, I like that one too, Fogsbane. It was a cool story. Cool story.
It was. Mm-hmm. It had a nice twist at the end of the guy just not remembering or not aware of his gun being loaded. I didn't know the gun was loaded. Famous last words.
I tried that defense before. It didn't work. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, if you're a good enough shot, you don't have to worry about stuff. What a topple. It's a terrible concept.
That was a bad concept.
Oh, dear.
Well, we got time for one more little old radio show, Dale.
We do. It's one of my faves, cool. Suspense, with a tale called It's All in Your Mind.
Ooh.
Yes. I am looking for that number here.
Originally broadcast way back.
Episode number 760. And comes to us on July 20th of 1958.
Suspense. And the producer of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, the master of mystery and adventure, William N. Robeson.
Back in the early days of Suspense, more than a decade ago, we would not have dared present the story you were about to hear. You would have said it was implausible, too far-fetched. But a lot of things that we thought never could happen are commonplace in this age of flying saucers and satellites. The fantasies of yesterday's science fiction writers are today's humdrum household realities. It's a long way from the family doctor's sugar-coated pill to the psychiatrist's Rauwolfia capsule. And tomorrow's pharmacology holds for us miracles yet undreamt of. Our story concerns one of these wonder drugs, which, who knows, may even now be in the experimental laboratory stage. Listen, listen then as Barry Kroger stars in It's All in Your Mind, which begins in just a moment.
Another visit with Joe and Daphne Forsythe.
Joe, stop reading that paper and talk to me.
I'm listening. Go ahead.
Well, I was talking to Mrs. Snyder today. You know, she's the one whose boy had 31% less cavities.
Uh-huh.
Well, she thinks that we should buy bigger savings bonds.
Uh-huh.
She says that when people can afford it, it makes more sense. Oh, she says there are a lot of different denominations. They start at $25, but then there are $50, $100, $200, and even $500 bonds.
Is that so?
And then with the ones we've already bought through the payroll savings plan, we'd have quite a nest egg.
Uh-huh.
Are you listening to me?
Uh-huh.
Did you know that the total accumulated compounded semi-annual interest of the Series E savings bond will amount to 93 1/3% of the original purchasing price?
Uh-huh.
I thought so. Joe, what did I say?
You said that United States savings bonds are a safe, easy way of investing.
I did.
That they help guard our country's freedom.
And?
They're the best investment in America's future.
I said something else, too.
Oh, yeah. You said that the total accumulated compounded semi-annual interest of the Series E savings bond will amount to 93 1/3% of the original purchase price.
Well, now, how did you do that?
Husband's trade secret.
And now, It's All in Your Mind, starring Barry Kroger, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
For some time, I'd had the feeling that our three lives, the Laramies and mine, were on a collision course. If we went on this way, one of us was sure to get hurt. Perhaps all of us. But I couldn't stop. This evening, as I arrived at their house, I felt a strange reluctance to go in, an ominous certainty that the crash was close.
Jack, darling.
Hello, Anne. Guess I'm a bit late.
Oh, it's all right. Howard was late getting home, too. He's upstairs changing.
Oh?
How about mixing us a drink?
Sure. How is Howard?
How is he ever?
New dress?
Mm-hmm. You like?
It's exciting. You're exciting, Mrs. Laramie. Anne, darling.
Oh, there you are, Jack. I thought I heard the bell.
Hi, Howard. Sorry I'm late.
Oh, I was late myself. Jack, tonight I have something really big to celebrate.
What happened? The company made you a vice president?
Oh, better than that. Remember the experiment I told you about last month?
Which one? You keep so many going at once.
The mental telepathy drug. Here they are.
You mean you've really done it?
Mm-hmm.
Those are your do-it-yourself telepathy pills?
You might put it that way. When absorbed into the bloodstream and carried to the brain, the chemical in these capsules sensitizes the brain to the thought waves of others, just as the flick of a switch tunes a radio set to a broadcast.
Have you tested these pills, Howard?
Well, no, not completely. That's why I brought these first two home. I'm going to take one, and the other is for you.
For me? Why me?
Howard, this could be dangerous.
Oh, nonsense, Anne. It's perfectly safe. I've tested the pills on animals. They're absolutely harmless. Of course, a monkey can't tell me whether it's reading my mind. For that, I need a human being.
It sounds pretty risky, tinkering with the brain.
Why? I dare say you've often tinkered with yours.
Oh, not me. I stay away from black magic.
Ever take a sleeping pill?
Oh, yes, but...
Tranquilizer?
Oh, a couple of times.
Well, you see.
but, Howard, reading people's minds...
Oh, why not, Jack? Duke University's experiments have established telepathy as a fact. Some people can read the minds of others.
I guess so. I don't see how.
Take this capsule and you will.
You're sure it'll be all right?
Jack, would I subject my best friend to a test if I thought it was dangerous? Anyway, I have an antidote prepared just in case.
Jack, please don't.
Besides, I'm taking one myself.
Well,
Jack.
I might as well give it a try.
That's the spirit. All right. Bottoms up.
Oh, Howard, this is insane. No telling what it might do to Jack.
Well, how about me? I've taken one.
Oh, I didn't mean
Jack,
that.
Jack, how do you feel? You notice anything?
No. What should I notice?
Well, if the capsules do what I think they will, you'll be aware of our thoughts.
I'm sorry, Howard. I don't get anything like that.
Of course, I'm forgetting. It'll take some time for the chemical to reach the brain. Look, why don't you two go ahead and have dinner, and I'll go back to the lab and prepare equipment for the tests. And you needn't come down for an hour or so.
You mean I've got to take some tests?
Well, naturally. Just a few controlled experiments. It won't take long.
Howard, dinner's almost ready.
Science is more important than dinner, my dear. An hour, all right, Jack?
Well, okay.
Too bad playing with pills isn't grounds for divorce. Darling, are you sure you're all right?
All right. I feel wonderful. We have got a whole hour alone together. Music. Let there be music. Will you dance, madame?
I'd rather kiss. Oh, Jack, I never knew what a kiss was before you.
Darling.
When I'm in your arms, it makes me remember I'm a woman.
Mm.
I come alive. All over.
I know.
Darling, kiss me
well,
again.
We'll return to our musical cocktail in a moment. But now, here is the latest news.
Oh, darling, I can't go on like this. It's unbearable.
Have you asked him for a divorce?
No.
Why not? You promised.
Oh, it's no use, Jack. I know he'd never agree to it. Too stuffy. Besides, it'd be bad for his career.
This is insane. Three adult people should be able to work this out logically. Reduced to its simplest equation, three people are one too many. One must go.
One must go.
Yes. One must go. But how?
Meanwhile, here at home, the latest of a series of dope tests, a drug and research laboratory...
And listen.
...was robbed early this morning of nearly $50,000 worth of narcotics. Police Chief Hayes assigned 10 extra officers...
That's it.
What do you mean? That's what?
Howard is working tonight alone. What if something happened to him, and it looked like another dope robbery?
What if something...
If he got in the way of the burglars, they'd have to kill him, wouldn't they?
Why, yes. Of course they would. They'd have to kill him.
moment, we continue with the second act of Suspense. Memo on medals. Information about our military awards and decorations. The awarding of American medals had its beginning during the Revolutionary War. Certain military and naval commanders were presented gold medals to commemorate their victories. The first medal in our nation's history was given to General George Washington after he had forced the British to evacuate Boston. That medal is now in the Boston Public Library, where it was placed on exhibit in 1876, 100 years after the historic event it commemorates. Technically, early medals were not decorations in the strictest sense. They honored both a victorious event and the officer in charge. Also, they were not designed to be worn, as later medals were. Therefore, they were presented in a suitable case for safekeeping. What we now know as the Purple Heart Medal was originally a badge of cloth material, specified in Washington's establishing order to be a figure of a heart in purple cloth or silk, edged with narrow lace or binding. Foreign decorations and medals are worn to the left of all American decorations. They are never worn alone, but must appear with at least one American medal. Few tributes are as meaningful and as cherished as the awards and decorations of our armed forces.
That's right. Decorate a soldier today.
I'll use crepe paper.
Crepe paper?
Crepe paper, yes. Why not?
It's all in your mind. It's all in your mind. Hey, for nostalgia's sake, I went out and bought me some Jiffy Pop. I haven't had Jiffy Pop in decades.
Oh, wow.
Yep. That magic treat is much fun to make as it is to eat.
Yep. Valentine,
now, be careful! Don't blow it up too much. There's that certain moment when you've got to take it off the heat, otherwise you're going to have Jiffy Ash.
Jiffy Ash. Well, that could be good too. Lots of lovely
Jiffy
carbon.
Lube, so.
Yep.
Yeah.
It might taste like Jiffy Lube. Blech.
Yeah. I think it tastes a little better now. I like popcorn. Don't do that to my popcorn. I tell you what, I was making popcorn once, and I picked up the wrong bottle. Instead of pouring in, like, vegetable oil, I put in, like, instead of corn oil, I put in, like, corn syrup. It didn't work the same way. It didn't work.
Wasn't working out for you, huh?
That was back when I was a ute.
A ute.
I can't find the cooking oil. I'll just use our corn oil. I'll just use this corn syrup. See how that works out.
There you go.
It didn't. No.
Didn't work out so good.
No.
It sounded like it had potential. I mean.
Yeah.
Well, I thought so.
Yeah. Surprised you could do almost it's kind of sort of almost how you make kettle corn, except you do need the oil.
Yeah, you still need the oil to make it pop first, yeah. Something about being in that syrup didn't help it pop any, yeah.
I'm wondering, how much did you burn the kitchen before you realized something wasn't quite right?
No, I didn't burn the kitchen. It didn't take long to figure out the thing wasn't going to pop. What can I say? I was an inquisitive ute.
A ute.
The Inquisition of Ute. The Spanish Inquisition of Ute.
I'm sorry, youth.
What's a ute?
Joe. I love Joe. Joe Pesci is the greatest.
That was a great role for Fred Gwynn, too. That was a great role for Fred Gwynn.
Yeah. That helped break his stereotype of, and plus it was many years after, but his stereotype of being Herman.
Herman Munster, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Last time he did that Herman Munster thing was for one of their made-for-TV specials. And he kept turning it down, until he offered him so much money, his wife said, "You'd be crazy not to do that for that much money."
Yeah. Now, Fred Gwynn, very talented. He could sing. He could do some other stuff. And we've heard him here on Erie House.
Yeah, we have on Mystery Theater. And I keep thinking of, when I think of Fred Gwynn, I also think of Pet Sematary.
Oh, yeah.
That's another great role. Don't go where the dead people, you know, where the dead things are. Let me show you where it is.
Yep.
It's down the lane here. Let me show you where you're never supposed to go. I'll take you there.
Yeah. Let me draw you a map, actually. See.
No, I want to make sure you know where it isn't supposed to be.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. That's the great philosophy. That's right up there with the great philosophy. You see that red button? That red button, don't ever touch that red button. Red button. That's the only
right
red button in the entire building.
Beautiful red
building.
Shiny, don't touch that button. See how it shines? Don't touch it.
I wrote that in Spaceship One, and Jay Bach was doing a victory dance, and he danced right and bumped into it during his victory dance. But, you know, the animator was telling me the whole time, saying, "Why the heck would you make one button that would blow up your facility? You know, why would you do that?"
You're supposed to have one in case of saboteurs.
Oh, in case of saboteur. Yeah, okay.
The Starship Enterprise had a self-destruct button.
But you had to go through three different codes. The captain had to give a code.
Yes.
The first officer had to give the code. And then the chief engineer or whoever was, if Mr. Scott wasn't there, the third in command had to give a code. I think even Dr. McCoy once had to give a code.
One of the yeomen or a red shirt, give us the code, for God's sake. No, and I think it makes sense. You would want to make it difficult to self-destruct, that everyone agrees that this is an urgent and there's no other way to protect the interests of Starfleet.
Yeah, that's true. That would be true,
that's
yeah.
True. Mm-hmm.
Those stinking colonialists.
Yeah, of course. Nowadays, if you go on a super, super aircraft carrier, all you have to do is just sneak around the corner and just take the keys and toss them over the side.
The keys.
I've stopped it. Good luck starting it.
They have keys for the
She threw the keys
job.
Over. Yeah, the keys. Yeah, stirred her up.
I remember one movie where a pair of Volkswagen keys was what were needed to start a spaceship. You don't want to talk about that film right now. For those who get that reference, you know what I'm talking about. All right, let's wrap up. And we'll even have some fun time, possibly. Let's wrap up.
Woo-hoo!
Suspense. It's all in your mind.
And now, starring Barry Kroger, Act 2 of It's All in Your Mind.
It was after 11 when I got to the Murdoch Laboratories, down by the waterfront, where the damp air smells of salt and sewage and dead fish. Looking up through the fog, I saw a light on the third floor, the window of the lab. For a moment, I thought I would be sick. But it passed, and I clutched at the gun in my pocket. I climbed quietly up the stairs and entered the lab.
Is that you, Jack?
Yeah. Ready for the test?
No, not quite. You sit right there. I'll be with you in a moment.
As Howard puttered, I casually questioned him and learned that the lab's supply of narcotics was kept in a locked cabinet in the next room. The setup was perfect. The police would find the dope missing and Howard dead. The gun felt cold as my fingers closed on the butt. I would have sworn.
Howard, for a moment I could have sworn I heard you whispering, but I was watching your lips and they didn't move.
What? It's beginning to work then.
Success. Real success at last. A milestone of science.
Can you get my thoughts, Jack?
Must concentrate. Make it easier for him. Do you read me, Jack?
Yes. Yes, I do. I can read your mind.
The capsule works. You're telepathic.
It was mad. Insane. I could read his mind. I stared at Howard as he bent over his notes. And then it came to me. If I could read his mind, he could read mine.
Jack, I got it. I got that. You're thinking I can read your thoughts. I can.
My God, he's doing it.
I am.
He knows I'm going to kill him.
Kill? Kill? What are you thinking, Jack?
What's the matter? Has something gone wrong with the drug?
Why do you want to kill me, Jack?
I've got to hurry. Don't give him a chance.
He's mad. He's going to kill me. But he's my best friend. I've got to get out of here.
Howard, stop!
Next door, I broke open the cabinet and cleaned it out, emptied everything into Howard's briefcase, and quietly left the building. Along the wharf outside, I slipped the case and the gun into the water. The tide was going out. In an hour, they would be lost forever. Then, I drove back to my apartment. Killing Howard had unnerved me, but the telepathy experience was worse. Shocked me again as I walked across the lobby. A flood of thoughts reached out for me, clamoring to be heard, tumbling over and over each other like ants in my mind.
When I've been so tired.
What a good looking man. I hope you notice.
Everything closes early.
She's nothing but a pig.
Why don't all these people...
The barrage confused me. It was difficult to think. I hurried to my room. It's eerie, knowing all those people's thoughts. Call Anne in the morning. Probably not safe now. Now I'll know all her thoughts. All of anybody's thoughts. Can do anything. Get anything.
Better try to get some sleep. I'm tired. So tired.
Huh? What's that?
I can't move. Can't move. Can't get away.
What the? What's going on? Oh. Who could that be? Oh, the guy next door. That nervous little fellow.
Oh, no. Must I dream other people's nightmares, too?
In a moment, we continue with the third act of Suspense.
We have, together, ample capacity in freedom to defend freedom. This is NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Day after day, month after month, since April 4th, 1949, the activities of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization have moved steadily forward on many fronts. This complete cooperation must and will continue because the concept of national self-sufficiency is out of date. Countries of the free world are interdependent, and only in genuine partnership and by combining their resources sharing tasks in many fields, can progress and safety be found. The United States of America is a part of NATO. You should be aware of and alert to the objectives and programs of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization.
And now, starring Barry Kroger, Act Three of It's All in Your Mind.
When the alarm went off at 7, I was still tired. The nightmares of the guy next door had kept us both awake half the night. I realized that I couldn't take much more of other people's thoughts. I needed the antidote. Anne would know where Howard kept it. Wonderful thing, telepathy, Howard had said. Too bad he didn't live long enough. He'd have learned it's like living in a madhouse.
Hello?
Anne?
Oh, Jack, darling.
Everything all right?
Of course, yes. The police were here.
They've gone?
Yes. They're convinced it was the dope gang.
Good. I'm coming over.
Well, isn't that dangerous?
I'll decide that.
Never used that tone before.
I've never felt like this before.
What's wrong?
I'll tell you when I get there. She wondered what was wrong. Let her live other people's nightmares, and she'd find out soon enough. Suddenly I realized that Anne's thoughts hadn't come to me over the phone. And I remembered Howard saying something about the effect diminishing with distance, that I'd have to be near people to pick up their thoughts. But I kept hoping that the drug had worn off during the night. The instant I stepped into the apartment lobby, I found out.
Good morning, Mr. Benton.
Hi, Joe. Got a morning paper left?
Yeah, sure, Mr. Benton. Read all about the big dope murder.
Man, what a night this jerk Benton must have spent. Look at them eyes.
What did you say?
You're looking great today, Mr. Benton. You got a big deal on?
Was I talking out loud?
Why, you...
What's the matter, Mr. Benton?
Forget it. I'm in a hurry. On the street, I stopped, looked back at Joe. He was still staring after me. Got to watch it. Almost gave myself away. Used to wish I knew what people were thinking. What an advantage I'd have. Can't keep this up. I need the antidote. I couldn't stand it, listening to other people's troubles, their gripes, complaints, psychotic hates, the evil and filth that spawn in the minds of men. It was almost like a punishment, like retribution. I couldn't shut out the thoughts. They were all around me. By the time I slammed the door at Anne's, I knew I couldn't face them again. Anne, help me.
Jack, you shouldn't have come here now. The police
You've
will
got
say...
to help me, Anne.
Help you? What's wrong? Does anyone know?
No. It's the pill. It worked.
The pill. The telepathy drug. Could it have worked? Is he sick?
Sit down, darling.
I don't want to sit down. Just help me get rid of these thoughts, these voices.
He doesn't know what he's saying. He's losing his mind.
I'm not losing my mind. You see, I know what you're thinking. It's real. We laughed about it. But, Anne, the antidote. Where did Howard keep the antidote?
Why, he kept that sort of thing with the narcotics for safety. Didn't you see it?
With the narcotics? I didn't look at labels. I just grabbed everything in the cabinet, threw it into the harbor. It's washed out to sea by now. And we've got to get away.
Oh, Jack, we can't. The police would be suspicious.
Oh, let them be. I don't care so long as I get away from people. Look, we'll get married right away and get out of here.
Oh, no. I don't want to go away. I don't want to get married. I don't need Jack anymore. I can do better. Could tell the police. I couldn't kill Howard. They can't arrest me.
Anne, you wouldn't tell. You said you loved me. Anne, you've got to help me.
I'll help you, darling.
In a pig's eye. I'm free. Want to stay that way. Must call police. Tell them he did it. Get rid of him.
You do mean it. Anne, stay away from that phone.
Jack. No, Jack, no. Help. Don't touch me.
Oh, no, you don't.
Oh, Jack. joking me?
Yes, my darling.
Oh.
You won't talk to anyone ever again.
Please, Jack, don't.
Jeffrey, I'm dying and I can't do anything about it.
Stop, Jack. Jack, I won't tell.
There's somebody at the door. I've got to get out of here. Out the back way. I've got to get away.
There's so many people. I can't stand it. I can't think.
Get out of my way. Leave me alone. Stop thinking. Stop thinking, all of you. Stop thinking. I can't stand it. Leave me alone. Stop it. Stop it.
He just jumped off the honest officer. He ran right out in front of me. Well, how could I know he was gonna? You expect me to read his mind?
Suspense. In which Barry Kroger starred in William N. Robeson's production of It's All in Your Mind. Written by Morris Lee Green and William Walker. Supporting Barry Kroger and It's All in Your Mind were Shirley Mitchell, Mary Ellis Rivard, Lou Krugman, Lawrence Dobkin, and Sam Pierce. Listen. Listen again next week when we return with the Steel River Prison Break. Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Yeah, the outro in the later years sounds something like a march there.
Dun, dun, dun.
That was the armed forces where they couldn't have the commercial, so they had extra time left over. They had the march, the suspense march here. But believe it or not, I do have a moral for this particular episode.
A moral, you say?
I have a moral.
Eerie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story.
His apologies to Gar. If someone can read my mind simply by taking a pill, I wish it would just take a cherry lifesaver instead. That's it.
That's right.
Sorry, Tarzan, didn't mean to step on your toes.
That's quite all right. I think he was showing his approval for your fine moral.
I have a shameless promotion to promote real quick here as we quickly ran out of time. Saturday, 10 p.m., The Weirdest Really Bad Movie premieres its latest episode movie, a two-hour movie presentation on the WeirdDarkness.com watch party. WeirdDarkness.com. Then if you put a slash watch party, go right there. Or if it goes to the main point, you just go hit the watch party. And we'll be there 10 p.m. on Saturday.
And then tomorrow, a little change there, not CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Rather, we have, what do we got? Whole lot.
Nightbeat. Nightbeat.
And
yep. Good old Frank.
The Magnificent Parker.
Yeah.
Proudly
is,
We Hail.
From the show called Proudly We Hail. Yes. Never played one of those. One of those World War II for the soldiers type shows.
Yep. Another first timer for Eerie House Radio. That's tomorrow night starting at 6:30 Eastern. And if Gar is not quite ready for his radio program, you can bet there'll be a vault program tomorrow on the Twitches right after our show. And then, of course, the watch party is after that, right? 10 o'clock?
Yep. Well, it'll be towards the end of that. Yeah. Brand new show. We're doing the Magic Sword from a medieval bar here in Akron.
Say goodnight, CW.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's one left. But me.
Good night, everybody.
When next we meet in Frankenstone.
Good night, Vince.
Don't come alone.
Good night.
Hey, Vincent, I'm here. Remember, Vincent? Hey.
And you dig it?
Okay, I'll dig it.
Good.
I've got a shovel. I can dig it, man.
Yeah.
Hey, interesting shows tonight. I know we have some interesting shows tonight. Yeah.
Definitely. Watch party at 10 o'clock. Ooh.
Watch party 10 p.m. on WeirdDarkness.com.
WeirdDarkness.com. It's not dark weirdness. It's weird darkness.
It's weird darkness. Yeah.
Okay.
And they have a daily podcast and weekend radio show, and at least once a month they have a weirdo watch party. That's where we'll be this Saturday, 10 p.m.
Oh, really? I haven't heard of this venue. That sounds pretty cool.
Cool. It does. Gentlemen, with that, I simply must be away till tomorrow. But with that, may I do my final duty of the evening?
You may.
Absolutely.
Hey. Oh, Mr. Durante, kindly take it away.
Good night.
So bye-bye.
What more is this say but good night?
Give me day.
We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Hurry, fool, up we the same.
Good
night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Arrivederci. Hasta la vista.
Adios.
Adios, muchachos. Caballeros.
Will you get out of here?